Station for public broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Today, we're going to let you decide what we do and where we go. I've got a few things I'm going to present to you, and then you tell me which direction we should head as we wind down Radioactivity for the year and then get a fresh start next Tuesday after the New Year's holiday. First, one listener comment about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we got into a discussion after an interview with a USF professor. We discussed global warming. The USF professor is headed to Antarctica to look at the melting of the Antarctic ice sheets. So here's what one listener had to say following yesterday's show.
I was calling about yesterday's Radioactivity. At the end of the show, you were looking at emails of vitriol from a climate denier who was blasting the professor from USF. I had to laugh because I put climate deniers right in the category with evolution deniers. There's physical evidence of both. There's physical evidence of climate change with the accelerating melting of glaciers and ice packs and everything, plus the increased number of severe weather events around the world. Just like in evolution, there's fossils, physical evidence. So I guess ignorance is bliss, and you can just be a science denier. It is laughable, but ignorant people vote too, so we're screwed.
Well, there you have a listener comment about yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I want to mention two news items before we start into the main body of today's program. BuzzFeed News is reporting this. NPR did not have this at the top of the hour. We'll see if they have it later on today. But BuzzFeed News is reporting this, that the number of U.S. troops who died in war zones rose in 2017, the first year of Donald Trump's presidency, for the first time in 6 years. As of December 28th, at least 33 U.S. military personnel had been killed in war zones overseas, compared to 26 last year, according to an analysis of casualty statements released by the Pentagon. At least 21 of those died in combat, according to the Pentagon, some in places where the U.S. presence was not widely known. The total is a far cry from the height of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan in 2007, when more than 1,000 U.S. troops were killed. But the variety of places where U.S. troops died in combat may indicate what lies ahead under an administration that has granted the military greater authority than its predecessors to act without consulting leaders in Washington, D.C. Former military officials and experts say 2017 also showed a worrisome trend toward less transparency about how and where U.S. troops are killed. In June, the U.S. military said it would no longer release immediate information about U.S. combat deaths in Afghanistan. The Trump administration has also been opaque about troop levels in some countries, such as Syria, where U.S. officials finally acknowledged that 2,000, not 500, U.S. forces were operating. High-profile combat deaths in Yemen, Niger, and Somalia this year led to the first realization for many Americans and some members of Congress that hundreds of U.S. troops are fighting in those countries. So you can look up that story. That's a brand new story on BuzzFeed News. More troops died abroad, U.S. troops died abroad in fighting than did last year. It's an uptick in the number of U.S. combat deaths. Well, we're going to open up the phone line soon and take your feedback. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. One more story I want to tell you about, and this is being reported by the McClatchy newspapers, the McClatchy D.C. Bureau. Has a story out this morning that says, jailed Russian says he hacked DNC on Kremlin's orders and can prove it. And the story says this, a jailed Russian who says he hacked into the Democratic National Committee computers on the Kremlin's orders to steal emails released during the 2016 U.S. presidential election campaign now claims he left behind a data signature to prove his assertion. In an interview with Russia's RAIN television channel made public Wednesday, that's yesterday, Konstantin Kozlovsky provided further details about what he said was a hacking operation led by the Russian intelligence agency, better known by its initials FSB. Among them, Kozlovsky said he worked with the FSB to develop computer viruses that were first tested on large, unsuspecting Russian companies, such as the oil giant Rosneft, later turned them loose on multinational corporations. Now, the jailed Russian, Kozlovsky, first came to public attention in early December when word spread about his confession last August 15th in a Russian courtroom that he was the person who hacked into the DNC computers on behalf of Russian intelligence. The Russian was jailed earlier this year, alleged to have been part of a hacking group there that stole more than $50 million from Russian bank accounts through what's called the Lurk computer virus. Lurk, L-U-R-K. The alleged hacker posted to his Facebook page in December a transcript and audio recording of his confession during a pretrial court hearing. He also confessed online to having hacked investigators looking into the crash of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, brought down in July of 2014 by a missile near the disputed Ukrainian border with Russia. In written answers from jail made public Wednesday by Rain TV, a Moscow-based independent TV station that has repeatedly run afoul of the Kremlin, Kozlovsky said he fears his minders might turn on him and planted a poison pill during the DNC hack. He placed a string of numbers that are his Russian passport numbers and the number of his visa to visit the Caribbean island of St. Martin in a hidden .dat file, which is a generic data file. That allegation is difficult to prove, partly because of the limited universe of people who have seen the details of the hack. The DNC initially did not share information with the FBI, instead hiring a tech firm called CrowdStrike, run by a former FBI cyber leader. That company has said it discovered the Russian hand in the hacking, but had no immediate comment on the claim by Kozlovsky that he planted an identifier. The newest allegations are potentially significant if the FSB, that's the Russian intelligence agency, did in fact direct Kozlovsky, then it debunks Russian President Vladimir Putin's assertion that his government had nothing to do with the hacking that all major U.S. intelligence agencies put at his feet. It also calls into question the view of a hack that was conducted as a closely held organized FSB campaign directed from central offices. Kozlovsky says he worked largely from home with limited knowledge of others, and that the political hack was just part of a larger relationship with the FSB's top cyber officials on viruses directed at other countries and the private sector. All right, so that's a brand new story. It's out today. The McClatchy newspapers, I believe they still own maybe the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Bradenton Herald, and the Miami Herald. And so you can find that at the McClatchy website. And the headline that you want to look for is Jailed Russian says he hacked DNC on Kremlin's orders and can prove it. All right, so if that story turns out to be largely true, that'll be very interesting. And now we know how to, we look for this guy's passport numbers if they're left behind in the DNC computers. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. We want to thank a bunch of people who've made donations. James Roberts in Plant City made a $50 donation to WMNF this morning online on our secure website. Thank you, James. And here's an anonymous donor, I think. Pamela has made a $250 donation to WMNF. Pamela, thank you very much for that. And Bob in Clearwater has made a contribution to WMNF, and he's going to go see Henry Rollins at the Capitol Theater. You can make a donation, an end-of-the-year donation. Do it while your tax break still exists. And you can go to our secure website, WMNF.org, and make your contribution. Well, lots of good stuff coming up today on WMNF. Mitch Perry is out of town. He usually does the Midpoint program at noon on a Thursday. Mitch is out of town, though. And so instead of Mitch, we're going to hear Norman B., and he's going to do his Life Elsewhere program, which we feature Sundays at noon on our HD3 channel. It's a really good interview show that Norman B. does, and he mixes in some great music. So that's coming up at 12 noon when Norman fills in for Mitch Perry. And then we'll have an executive session today at 1 o'clock as usual. So here's my question to you, and that is, should we talk more about politics? We can talk about some of the stories I just mentioned, the Russian hacking story, and also we can talk about the increased deaths of Americans who are in combat in many countries around the world. We could talk about that. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Or we could try to go in a more comedic direction and maybe listen back to some comedy bits, political comedy bits from this year. So let me know what you want to do. You can email the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Now, we almost entirely, both the music shows and the public affairs shows, almost entirely missed the Festivus celebration that was started by Seinfeld. And we're going to listen to some bits from the Seinfeld TV show featuring Jerry Seinfeld and Jerry Stiller, who played Seinfeld's dad on the series. And it's all about Festivus and the attendance of Festivus, which is a fake but funny holiday, an alternative to Christmas. And I'm thinking that maybe what we could do is spend the whole hour. Jeff Haynes, one of our phone producers today, says we should spend the whole hour just airing the grievances. So what do you think? Should we just spend a whole hour airing the grievances? Or do we do that all the time here on WMNF? So what do you think? Or should we turn to the lighter side and maybe listen to some comedy? What do you think? You can email the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Here's from the Seinfeld TV show, a description by various actors of the Festivus holiday. You want to celebrate this by airing grievances?
Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way.
What happened to the doll?
It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
When George was growing
up, his
father hated all the commercial and religious aspects of Christmas, so he made up his own holiday.
Oh, and another piece of the puzzle falls into place.
All right.
And instead of a tree, didn't your father put up an aluminum pole?
Oh, Jerry, stop it.
And then weren't there feats of strength that always ended up with you crying?
I can't take it anymore. I'm going to work. You happy now?
Well, sir, I gave out the fake card because I don't really celebrate Christmas. I celebrate Festivus.
Feminist.
Festivus, sir. And I was afraid that I would be persecuted for my beliefs. They drove my family out of Bayside, sir.
Are you making all this up, too?
Oh, no, sir. Festivus is all too real, and I could prove it if I have to.
Yeah, you probably should.
Kramer, any word from the vest?
No. Oh. Listen, Harry, I need the 23rd off.
Hey, I hired you to work during the holidays. This is the holidays.
But it's Festivus.
What?
You know you're infringing on my right to celebrate new holidays.
That's not a right.
Well, it's going to be, because I'm going back on strike.
Well, happy Festivus.
What is that? Is that the pole?
George, Festivus is your heritage. It is part of who you are.
That's why I hate it.
It's a big dinner Tuesday night at Frank's house. Everyone's invited.
Welcome, newcomers. The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it. And now, as Festivus rolls on, we come to the feats of strength.
Not the feats of strength.
This year, the honor goes to Mr. Kramer.
Uh-oh. Oh, gee, Frank, I'm sorry. I gotta go. I have to work a double shift at H&H.
I thought you were on strike.
Yeah, well, I caved. I mean, I really had to use their bathroom. Frank, no offense, but this holiday's a little out there.
Kramer, you can't go. Who's gonna do the feats of strength?
How about George?
Good thinking, Cougar. Until you pin me, George, Festivus is not over.
Please, someone stop this.
Let's rumble!
I think you can take him, Georgie.
Hey, come on, be sensible.
Stop crying and fight your father.
Ow! Ow, I got it!
This is the best Festivus ever!
Well, you heard Jerry Stiller in there as Jerry Seinfeld's dad there talking about Festivus, the holiday that somehow we skipped this year here at WMNF, involving feats of strength and the airing of the grievances. I sometimes think that every day here at WMNF we air grievances. So to the question of what should we do, should we listen back to some of the comedy bits from the last year, or should we open up the phones and celebrate Festivus with the airing of the grievances? We couldn't do the feats of strength over the radio. Ed says, comedy, please. We need a break from all the depressing realities. And then 813 says, comedy, please. Linda says, comedy, please. And Dennis says, comedy, please. So I guess we're going to do comedy. So let's listen to what some of the late night comedians have been doing for the last year. Their target, of course, President Trump. And we're going to start with... Let's go to CBS, and we're going to hear Stephen Colbert. This is one of the early monologues from this year, Stephen Colbert, about the president. I think it still holds up, though, and we can take some phone calls later on. But here is Stephen Colbert in the early weeks of the Trump presidency talking about the president.
Welcome to the Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. It is day 102 of the Trump presidency, 1,358 days to go, but who's counting? Now, little notch on my wall. Now, Trump has repeatedly said that this 100 days thing is totally arbitrary, okay? Totally unimportant. And to prove how unimportant it is, he took out a TV ad, he cut a cake on Air Force One, and he held a rally in Pennsylvania. The theme of that rally, promises made, promises kept, which is better than their original slogan, promises made, never mind, never said it, fake news, watch Fox and Friends. So, long, it's nice, it's got a rhythm. He also proved just how unimportant this was with a bunch of interviews over the weekend. First, on Friday, he talked with Reuters about his new job.
Well, I loved my previous life. I had so many things going. I actually, this is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier.
He thought it would be
easy.
How
about
that?
It turns out being leader of the free world is harder than licensing your name to luxury meat. Delicious. But that's not all. He trumped on.
I thought it was more of a... I'm a details-oriented person. I think you would say that. But I do miss my old life.
We all do, sir. I get why he misses it. I get it, man. Because in his old life, he could spend his days golfing, insulting people on Twitter, and hanging out with his family. Also, now... But that's not the only reason he's bummed. It's also because I can't drive anymore. And you know he drove all the time. He's a great driver. Yeah. I mean, just look how comfortable he is behind the wheel. That's exactly how you drive. Hands at 7 and 5, mouth open screaming. Ah! Ah! Red light! Thanks, Obama! Ah! Ah! Ah!
Open road.
Of course, he addressed the proudest achievement of his presidency, it existing. Because in the middle of discussing Chinese-American relations with the Reuters reporters, he stopped to hand out copies of what he said were the latest figures from the 2016 electoral map, saying, pretty good, right? The red is obviously us. The blue, obviously Democrats, except when it's water. Hard to tell. Aquaman, personal friend. Great guy. There's probably... There's even a picture I colored these myself. These are all placemats. I had them. Can you put that photo back up? Can I see that again? This is my impression of a T-Rex. Little hands, like this, like this. What? Everything's in here. I'm proud to say that the official defining 100 Days interview took place right here on CBS with the nation face himself, John Dickerson, yesterday. And he started off with North Korea.
Mr. President, you and the administration said to North Korea, don't test a missile. They have tested a missile. Is the pressure not working?
Well, I didn't say don't test a missile. He's going to have to do what he has to do.
So our official policy is you do you. What can I say? Hitler gonna Hitler. Kim Jong gonna un. Then, that's not this, I don't know this. Then our friend John Dickerson asked Trump what he thought of Kim Jong Un.
I can tell you this, and a lot of people don't like when I say it, but he was a young man of 26 or 27 when he took over from his father. A lot of people, I'm sure, tried to take that power away, whether it was his uncle or anybody else. And he was able to do it, so obviously he's a pretty smart cookie.
So, Trump thinks Kim Jong-un is a smart cookie, to which all of North Korea replied, cookie? He's a monster. The point is, he's a monster. Fat little monster. Now, Dickerson gamely tried to get Trump to commit to releasing his tax returns finally, but it was the same old song and dance about under audit. So, I'd like to rephrase the question. Mr. President, can you talk about your tax returns as a metaphor for your penis?
I have a very big tax return. You've seen the pictures. My tax return is probably higher than that from the floor. When you look at other people's tax return, even other wealthy people, their tax return is this thick. My tax return is this high.
We get it. You have a huge tax return. But you know what would be nice? A full release. Later. So I've heard. I wouldn't know. I'm flattered, but I'm not into that scene. Later in the same interview, Trump gave Dickerson a tour of the Oval Office.
This is the Resolute Desk. It's a great desk with a phenomenal history. This was FDR, it was Ronald Reagan, it was Kennedy. There's some great presidents behind this desk.
Yes, and if you put your ear to it like a seashell, you can hear all of them rolling in their graves. And President Trump. And President Trump explained that visitors are awed by the power of the Oval Office.
In one case, I won't say who, somebody you know very well, the head of a major, major company. The person came into the Oval Office and started to cry. This is a tough person, by the way. Came into the Oval Office and started to cry.
Mr. President, if I came to the Oval Office and saw you sitting behind the desk, I'd cry too. Now, there was a nice moment when John Dickerson talked about some previous president's thoughts with Trump, other men who have stood in that room and their thoughts about the responsibilities of the presidency. But I'm not quite sure that Donald Trump understood the message.
George W. Bush said the reason the Oval Office is around is there are no corners you can hide in.
Well, there's truth to that. There's truth to that. There are certainly no corners.
That's what he meant.
Okay. Let's be positive. At least he knows his shapes. He knows oval. Okay. He knows the Pentagon and rhombus, because it's Reince Priebus' middle name. Reince Rhombus Priebus. And on the subject of previous presidents, Dickerson asked Trump if he still stands by claims that President Obama wiretapped him.
You stand by that claim about him?
I don't stand by anything.
It's true. He doesn't stand by anything except the dressing room door at Miss USA pageant. But
hiya!
Nixon.
But, based on a true story of that joke, but Dickerson asked his question anyway.
But I'm asking you because you don't want it to be fake news. I want to hear it from President Trump.
You don't have to ask me.
Why not?
Because I have my own opinions. You can have your own opinions.
But I want to know your opinions. You're the President of the United States.
It's enough. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Can't talk anymore. No, can't talk anymore. Important presidency work here. Got a president all over these papers here. Let's see, what's this? Yep, still paper, still blank paper, nothing on there. Let's see, let me read this presidential briefing. Yep, I got the briefing right here. I got the briefing, yes, it's true. We gotta do something. Yes, yeah. Sorry, John, can't talk, gotta do something about the nation of Charministan. Sorry about that. We must wipe them off the map. Uh-huh. Is Dickerson still over there? I don't want to look. Is he still there? Bring, 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 bring. Sorry. Hello. Yes. Got his very secure phone. Yes, this is Donald Trump. John, I gotta take this call. It's the president of Asia calling. Hello. Really important. John, I can't hear you. I've got a banana in my ear. Obviously, I'm joking. Something was on that paper, all right? Do we have a reverse shot, Jim? Yeah, there you go. But I gotta say, walking out in the middle of a sentence wasn't even the president's biggest insult to John Dickerson.
And I think actually I've been very consistent. You know, it's very funny when the fake media goes out, you know, which we call the mainstream media, which sometimes I must say is you. But when the
you
fake.
Mean me personally or?
Your show. I love your show. I call it Deface the Nation.
Really? Donald Trump, John Dickerson, is a fair-minded journalist and one of the most competent people who will ever walk into your office. And you treat him like that? Now, John Dickerson has way too much dignity to trade insults with the President of the United States to his face. But I, sir, am no John Dickerson. And when you... Okay? Let me introduce you to something we call the Tiffany Way. When you insult one member of the CBS family, you insult us all. Bazinga. All right? Here we go. All right? Get the gloves off. Mr. Trump, your presidency, I love your presidency. I call it Disgrace the Nation. You're not the POTUS. You're the bloatus. You're the glutton with the button. You're a regular gorge, Washington. You're the president, but you're turning into a real pricktator. Sir, you attract more skinheads than free Rogaine. You have more people marching against you than cancer. You talk like a sign language gorilla who got hit in the head. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster. Your presidential library is going to be a kid's menu and a couple of Jugs magazine. The only thing smaller than your hands is your tax returns. And you can take that any way you want. We got a great show for you tonight.
All right, that's Stephen Colbert from earlier this year after 100 days of President Trump in the White House. And we're playing some comedy bits today here on Radioactivity. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. When the president had his first solo press conference, Seth Meyers did this bit about that first press conference. Let's listen in on that.
Are. The Trump administration has been roiled by chaos, and today Trump doubled down on that chaos by holding a bizarre press conference full of false claims, grievances, and attacks on the media. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. So, Our show tapes at 6:30, and usually we start writing a closer look the night before. By 1 p.m. today, we had a draft about Republican attempts to repeal Obamacare that we felt good about. And then Donald Trump held what can only be described as a bat crazy press conference that rendered this script completely meaningless. So, if you don't mind... Bye, dead jokes. Now, to set the scene for this press conference, in just over 3 weeks, Trump's White House has been plagued by infighting, legal challenges, messy executive orders, the resignation of his national security advisor, and now the revelation that his aides had contacts with Russia during the campaign. And if there's been anything good in this, it's been watching Trump develop techniques to avoid questions about that Russian contact. Here's a move called the drift away.
Mr. President, are you answering questions about your associate contacts with the Russians during the campaign?
And here's another one. Here's another one called the pretend I don't hear you.
Can you comment on the reporting that was contacted with your senior advisor that suspected Russian operatives during the presidential campaign?
Not only does Trump look miserable, but check out Bibi Netanyahu. He has a face like, should I go? Being a world leader sitting with Trump right now is like being a woman on a date with a guy and then his wife shows up screaming, your kids want to know where you are! I just got out to dinner. This may come as a surprise to Donald Trump, but it turns out the demands of actually governing are much more strenuous than the free-for-all atmosphere of campaigning, which may be why at White House events and meetings with foreign leaders, Trump keeps reliving the glory days of his election victory.
We are, you know, very honored by the victory that we had, 306 electoral college votes. We were not supposed to crack 220. You know that, right? We won by a very, very large electoral college vote. We had a wonderful election, didn't we?
We did well. The election, it came out really well. Next time, we'll triple it up or quadruple it, right?
That's right.
We want to get over 51, right?
There you go.
At least 51.
Amen. Right.
Well, this is Black History Month.
Good segue, dude. Talked about his election victory at an event for Black History Month. In fact, did you guys know Frederick Douglass voted for me? Very alive. Great guy. In fact, Trump is so desperate for the instant gratification of cheering crowds that this weekend, he's responding to all the chaos in his government by heading back out to the campaign trail less than 4 weeks into his presidency.
The president's answer to all of this? Announcing overnight his first re-election campaign rally, scheduled for this weekend in Florida.
The White House says the president will hold a rally on Saturday down in Florida. Officials here are calling it a, quote, campaign event, Wolf. So take note, Democrats, the 2020 campaign apparently has already begun.
No! No! We are not ready for another campaign. People from the last campaign are still wandering around in the woods. You're like somebody who wants a birthday month. Your birthday is over. Get to work. Because if you start talking about 2020, it's only a matter of time until CNN puts up a countdown clock, and I am not watching the same clock for 4 years. Trump apparently couldn't wait until Saturday to get in front of the cameras because today he held his first solo press conference as president, and he used the opportunity to strike a more conciliatory tone with the media.
The press honestly is out of control. The level of dishonesty is out of control. It's all fake news. Fake news, fake news. Very fake news. Russia is fake news. Quiet, quiet, quiet. Sit down. Sit down. A very insulting question. Wait a minute. I don't have to tell you. I don't have to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. I'm just telling you. You know, you're dishonest people. Where are you from?
BBC.
Okay. Here's another beauty. Donald Trump rants and raves at the press. I'm not ranting and raving.
Did you hear him? He said he's not ranting and raving. But again, what president hasn't had to say, I'm not ranting and raving? Who can forget Lincoln's tirade at Gettysburg or FDR's fireside meltdowns? And of course, Ronald Reagan's famously saying, Mr. Gorbachev, if you don't tear down this wall, I'm gonna lose my Of course, it was Trump himself who spent the entire press conference whining about perceived grievances and slights and pushing false claims with zero basis in reality. Just to give you an idea of how all over the place this press conference was, at one point, Trump made this bizarre claim about the drug problem.
Drugs are becoming cheaper than candy bars.
I think I know what happened here. Donald, that's not the price, that's the name. Trump then claimed amazingly that his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, who Trump fired, did nothing wrong when he secretly discussed sanctions with the Russian ambassador. In fact, Trump even said that if Flynn had not contacted the Russian ambassador, Trump would have ordered him to do it himself.
I don't think he did anything wrong, which certainly would have been okay with me if he did it. I would have directed him to do it if I thought he wasn't doing it.
He did something I would have told him to do, so he had to go. Clean out your desk, buddy. Why are you cleaning out your desk? Finally, Trump did answer some questions about Russia, specifically some questions about the provocative actions Russia's taken recently, from deploying a missile in violation of a treaty to sending a spy ship near a naval base in Connecticut.
You mentioned the vessel, the spy vessel off the coast of the United States.
Not good.
There was a ballistic missile test that many interpret as
not
a violation
good.
Of an
not
agreement
good.
Between the two countries, and a Russian plane buzzed a U.S. destroyer.
Not good.
That's your answer? We're talking about Russian military aggression, not a turkey sandwich at the deli.
Not good. Very dry. Not good. Won't pay. Send back.
And then later, he casually mused about how great it would be for him politically if he attacked the Russian ship.
The greatest thing I could do is shoot that ship that's 30 miles offshore right out of the water. Everyone in this country is going to say, oh, it's so great.
Nobody would say that. The only way everybody is going to say, oh, that's so great, is if the Russian hooker tape is on Netflix this weekend. Trump then took a question from veteran journalist April Ryan of American Urban Radio Networks, who asked if Trump would be willing to meet with the Congressional Black Caucus. And Trump offered this pretty racist response.
Are you going to include the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional
Well,
Hispanic
I would.
Caucus
I tell you what. Do you want to set up the meeting? Do you want to set up the meeting?
No.
Are they friends of yours?
It's racist to assume all black people know each other. You don't know all orange people. Hey, Donald. Can you set up a meeting with Snooki and the Lorax? We'll talk about trees and tanning. But don't worry. Trump made sure to offend multiple demographics because when a reporter for a Jewish publication asked Trump about anti-Semitism in the U.S., Trump said this.
You see, he said he's going to ask a very simple, easy question. And it's not.
It's an important
question. It's not. Not a simple question. Not a fair question. Okay, sit down. I understand the rest of your question. We did very well relative to other people running as a Republican. Quiet, quiet, quiet. See, he lied about he was going to get up and ask a very straight, simple question. So, you know, so you should take that instead of having to get up and ask a very insulting question like that.
It's very rude to insult someone. Now sit down and shut up, you liar. Even when Trump put aside all of his bizarre paranoia, false claims, and complaints about the media and turned to actual policy, he didn't seem very comfortable. For example, Trump claimed that Republicans were working on a plan to repeal and replace Obamacare and said this.
We've begun preparing to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Wait. There's a secret Obamacare? Does it travel back in time like a DeLorean? And if so, can we fire up the flux capacitor and get that up to 88 miles an hour immediately? This has been a closer look.
Okay, so that was Seth Meyers on NBC about a month or two into the president's term in office. We're looking back at some of the comedy of the year here on Radioactivity, some of the political comedy of the year. And next we're going to hear from Samantha Bee. And her show is called Full Frontal. Let's listen to a little bit about Samantha Bee. This is all about that supposed dossier that implicates the Republicans and President Trump in a bunch of nefarious stuff. Here's Samantha Bee on radioactivity.
Frontal. Last night in Chicago, we watched President Obama give an emotional farewell address. Oh boy, here come the waterworks. And, you know, speaking of waterworks, hallelujah, it's comedy Christmas!
BuzzFeed News says the British intelligence passed to the Americans claims that during a trip to Russia, Mr. Trump rented a Moscow.
You're supposed to believe Trump has started paying people who do work for him? Of course, was the local news. The national press took a tippy-toe trip to euphemism town.
We are having one of those moments in American politics tonight, a confluence of events.
Just one of those.
Trouble with that Samantha Bee bit. So let's move on and see if we can play something. I think it gets more of the words that are prohibited by the FCC might show up on that one. So let's move on and hear from John Oliver on his show last week tonight, in which he dissects President Trump and the truth. We're going to listen to what John Oliver said a few months back about President Trump's relationship to the truth.
Normally, we like to focus this part of the show on complex, depressing policy issues. Something fun, like CO2 emissions from hearses, or space poverty, or the proliferation of special purpose taxing districts, a topic so boring you didn't even realize we literally already did that exact story last year. And we want to keep doing those kind of things, but unfortunately we can't until we address something even bigger, the concept of reality itself. And that is because of this guy. Now, since taking office around 412 years ago, Trump has made it clear that reality is not important to him. Think about it. He's exaggerated the size of his inauguration crowd. He said the election was marred by mass voter fraud with no real proof of that. He also falsely claimed that, that compared to Muslims, it was almost impossible for Christian refugees from Syria to get into the US. He even lied about the weather during his inauguration.
It was almost raining. The rain should have scared him away, but God looked down and he said, we're not going to let it rain on your speech.
No, he didn't. First, it did rain while you were speaking. That's why your wife was holding up an umbrella and people behind you were wearing ponchos. And second, if God did look down, his only thought would have been, wait, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir? Come on, I'm sick of them and I'm God. Could you not book silence, or was silence somehow boycotting this thing too? So that is where we are currently at. We have a president capable of standing in the rain and saying it was a sunny day. And before we go any further, Donald Trump lies is clearly not a fresh observation. Liberals are probably thinking, wow, hot take there, Johnny. Next you're gonna tell me that Obama is aloof, Dick Cheney is evil, and Paul, if you're on the right, you're probably thinking, oh great, another blizzard of snowflakes from Last Cuck Tonight with Johnny Trigger Warning. And yes, I know all other presidents have lied. PolitiFact found that just over a quarter of President Obama's statements that they evaluated were some degree of false. But with Trump, that number is currently over two-thirds. Perhaps that is why one reporter who's been covering Trump found himself saying this.
This is what makes it covering Donald Trump so very difficult. What does he mean when he says words?
Wow! What does he mean when he says words? We are talking about the president like a Tinder match we've been on four dates with. I asked him if we were going to hang out. What does he mean when he says words? Trump's relationship with the truth is going to be of profound importance going forward, because any policy discussion has to begin with a shared sense of reality, and Trump's reality can change within a single sentence.
When you hear 4.9 and 5% unemployment, the number's probably 28, 29, as high as 35. In fact, I even heard recently 42%.
Well, which one is it then?
Because a 4.9% rate might result in a cautiously constrictive monetary policy, whereas a 42% rate might result in the purge. So tonight, we thought it would be useful to try and answer four basic questions. How did we get a pathological liar in the White House? Where are his lies coming from? Why do so many people believe him? And what can we possibly do about it? And to that first question, Trump's lying is obviously nothing new. He lied about being invited on this show and about the ratings.
All right, so we're heading into territory again where John Oliver may let loose with a word that we don't want on the radio. So let's go back to Stephen Colbert. And Colbert has gotten into a kind of a verbal argument with President Trump on occasion. President Trump at one point called Stephen Colbert a no-talent guy. So when that happened, let's go back a few months and listen to Stephen Colbert's response. And here's Stephen Colbert reacting to President Trump calling him a no-talent guy.
Those, of course, are just trifling details. The president also spoke to Time magazine about the most important issue to him, this show. You see a no-talent guy like Colbert, there's nothing funny about what he says. What he says is filthy, and you have kids watching. It only builds up my base. It only helps me. People like him, the guy was dying. By the way, they were going to take him off television. Then he started attacking me, and he started doing better. But his show was dying. I've done his show. But when I did his show, which, by the way, was very highly rated, it was highest rating, the highest rating he's ever had. The President of the United States has personally come after me and my show. And there's only one thing to say.
Mr. Trump,
there's a lot you don't understand. But I never thought one of those things would be show business. Don't you know I've been trying for a year to get you to say my name? And you were very restrained, admirably restrained, but now you did it. I won. Oh, no. Please. Don't make me trend on Twitter again. Don't throw me in that hashtag briar patch. But you're not wrong. I will give this to the man. You're not wrong. I do occasionally use adult language, and I do it in public instead of in the privacy of an Access Hollywood bus. And it's true. That's dignified. That is dignified. And it's true, the night you appeared on this show right over there, it was very highly rated. In fact, the only episode that got better ratings was the night I had Jeb Bush on. That's right. You got beat by low-energy Jeb. But don't worry, you won the ratings college. And making jokes, to reference the Electro College, and making jokes about you has been good for ratings. It's almost as if the majority of Americans didn't want you to be president. But you know who's got really bad ratings these days? You do. Terrible approval numbers. I hear they're thinking about switching your time slot with Mike Pence. But since all of my success is clearly based on talking about you, if you really want to take me down, there's an obvious way. Resign. I mean, that's it, right? You have me. That's all I need to know.
I mean, if you did that, sir, if you did that, what would I talk about then? Accept your resignation, because that'd be fun. And here's the thing. A president going after someone telling jokes is unprecedented. That would be like Richard Nixon going after Alfred E. Newman. And if I may, Mr. President, I'd like to quote that great man. What, me worry?
Stephen Colbert, when President Trump called him out as a low-talent guy. Let's listen to some more comedy here as we wind down 2017. We're going to go back and listen to some Seth Meyers comedy from late night. And you can find all these bits on the TV show, on the network, networks on which they're on. Colbert's on CBS. You can find his outtakes on CBS and also Seth Meyers on NBC. Here's Seth Meyers and the dust-up over Sweden earlier this year.
With all the chaos we've seen in the Trump administration, you'd think Trump would have spent the weekend at the White House fixing his dysfunctional government. Instead, he was in Florida hitting the campaign trail. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Keeping tabs on Trump can be very disorienting. On one hand, you've got the genuinely ominous things he's done, from declaring the free press an enemy of the American people to preemptively blaming a judge for future terror attacks. And then you've got the everyday weirdness of life in the Trump era, like this story about New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's visit to the White House last week.
Governor Christie says President Trump forced him to eat meatloaf when they dined together at the White House.
This is what it's like to be with Trump. Okay. He says, there's the menu. You guys order whatever you want. And then he says, Chris, you and I are going to have the meatloaf.
He tells you what you're eating.
Yeah. And I said, well, so we're going to have the meatloaf. Fun. And he said, I'm telling you, the meatloaf is fabulous.
Did you have the meatloaf?
I did.
It's emasculating.
No, it's not.
Another man tells you what you're eating, you eat it? Not acceptable. I don't care who
eats. But it's the president.
It is the president, A.
And the president said, you're eating the meatloaf. Wouldn't you be like, I'm an adult, I'll get what I want, thank you?
I would go along with his recommendation.
You get the meatloaf.
Yeah, I mean, the guy eats there all the time. You would think, and the meatloaf was good.
Of course, the meatloaf was actually a second course for Christie after Trump made him swallow his pride. Also, that whole conversation sounded like mafia slang. You're not gonna have to worry about Chris Christie anymore. Let's just say Donnie made him eat the meatloaf. So that's the weird stuff, but Trump is also making major changes to foreign policy. For example, last week, Trump dropped the U.S. commitment to a two-state solution in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which is a huge deal, and certainly not something you want to do without consulting your foreign policy team first. But apparently, Trump made the move without reviewing the specifics of his new strategy with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Tillerson himself was in the air when Trump announced the change. Even just getting in an airplane now is a suspenseful experience under Trump. Pilots are going to start giving updates on the state of the nation before they land. It's a sunny 65 degrees in Los Angeles, and also Donald Trump has deported all Afghan hounds because he believes them to be the ISIS of dogs. And if you look out to the right, you will see that everything is on fire. The Trump White House has even stumbled when it comes to posting what should otherwise be non-controversial content to social media, like this photo posted to the official President of the United States Twitter account with the hashtag #MakeAmericaGreatAgain. Look how white that photo is. If you print that photo out, you can use it again as a blank piece of paper. It's like that old joke. What has 26 thumbs and no black friends? These guys. Even Republicans in Congress are apparently starting to get frustrated with the constant chaos in the Trump administration. South Dakota Senator John Thune said, there are things we want to get done here, and this constant disruption and drumbeat is a distraction, adding that he wanted the White House to get past the launch stage. Buddy, we're way past the launch stage. The rocket exploded shortly after takeoff, and the emergency raft is currently floating somewhere in the Pacific. He posed for it. And the dysfunction of the Trump administration also seems to be scaring off some people from working at the White House. After Trump's national security advisor, Michael Flynn, resigned last week, Trump offered the position to retired Admiral Robert Harward, who is widely respected by officials in both parties. But Harward rejected the offer. As CNN's Jake Tapper reported, a friend of Harvard's said he was reluctant to take the National Security Advisor job because the White House seemed so chaotic. Said Harvard called the offer a sandwich.
Well, that's Seth Meyers on NBC making jokes about politics. This is W.